with the live performance, you experience things that you never could have anticipated. That's where things go wrong in the weirdest way possible. And you're like, okay, how do I recover from this? But I always think about how, and this is just for anyone though, is like, you learn more from your failures than your successes.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. My name is Chris Ruggiero. This is the Between Dreams podcast. I'm sorry that my voice is a little bit crazy right now. For some reason, I kind of lost my voice this week, but the podcast must go on, and it kind of relies on my voice, so I'm here anyway, working through it for you guys. Thank you for joining. Excited for this week's guest, Snubby J. You've seen his video going all over the internet. It was reposted on the Now I've Seen Everything Facebook page. I'm looking at it right now, and Facebook is telling me that it has currently 61 million views. 61 million views. There's over a million shares alone on this video, and we'll kick that in right here so you'll remember what it is. It's the guy who is playing music by hitting these paddles onto pipes that are arranged in a keyboard-type fashion. So we did a couple shows here together in Los Angeles, and I was like, hey, I love that you're doing this really creative, cool thing. You should be on the podcast. He agreed to be on the podcast, and we shared a bunch of different stories about what he's up to, how he created this unique instrument himself. It's what the Between Dreams podcast is all about. Getting out there, making stuff, doing stuff. Not coming up with excuses, but coming up with stuff, doing stuff. Starting small, you start building a Rimba tube, as it's called. And one of my favorite parts of this was literally, you have to start building this by cutting one pipe to make a note sound. And then you make another one until you have a full, I don't want to call it a keyboard, but it's the full range of notes to be able to play a song. So it starts with that first thing. Get started. Just go. We talk about all that a bunch. So this is the Between Dreams podcast. Thank you for listening. I also have to give a shout out to my friend Kate, who was standing in as the first ever guest host of the Between Dreams podcast. It's my friend Kate from Pennsylvania. She was out visiting Los Angeles when we recorded this. And that was really cool to have a new viewpoint. She doesn't talk very much, but the contributions that she gives are valuable. So thank you also to Kate for being here. That'll be the random girl voice that you hear sometimes in there. As always, share it with a friend if you think they will enjoy it. And download whatever, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it's on chrisruggiero.com/podcast or on iTunes, the podcast app, Stitcher, Google Play Music, wherever. We're there. And thank you for being there or here as well. So here we go. Thanks for listening. This is Snubby J.
I'm Snubby J. I play the Rimba Tubes, which is a homemade PVC pipe instrument similar to the Blue Man Group. And it's basically just an instrument I built with my dad. I saw the show, the Blue Man Group show, about 11 years ago, I think. And 10 years ago, I was inspired to actually go and build the instrument. And we simply went to Home Depot and just bought a bunch of pipe and put it together. And it's basically a xylophone, but just made out of tubes. So it's set up like a piano and can take songs I grew up playing on the piano, but just can rock out.
Now there's a thing of, you made that sound really simple.
Yeah.
The question that I have, and this is an actual genuine question for people listening, I actually don't know the answer to this, is how do you, so I want to make a thing
that makes different tones to make music out of.
Yes.
How do I know how to make it so that this is this note and this is this note?
Right, right. There are ways to calculate the right length of the the right length of the pipe for the right note. And we found some lengths online that kind of got us started, but it ultimately comes down to how it sounds. And so the basic concept is the longer the pipe, the lower the note. The shorter the pipe, the higher the note. And so what we would do is we kind of guessed and checked our way through. If we knew a note was going to be really long, we knew it was going to take up a lot of space, we would start on that note and make sure that it took up the space it needed. But we would start a little longer, right? And like you would cut backwards because it's pipe. You can't really retune it with like a peg, like a guitar. You have to literally cut off tiny little slivers. And so we would cut back until it was no longer flat, but it was the right note. And then the shorter the pipes, you know, they're already really short as it is. And so they barely take up any space. So you have to also make sure that they can be the length that they need. And the first time I actually built my first instrument, we went along and we were just kind of, again, guessing and checking as we went. We completely built the high end wrong. Like we were in a whole other octave above. And when we refixed it, we realized we had not enough room in the shelf frame below to put all of the pipes in there to get the right notes. And so we actually had to jerry rig it where the piano, I don't know if you guys play piano, but like the B flat actually had to be extended out further beyond the table. And so on my old instrument, I always have to reach a little further to play this note. And so, you know, just little odd things like that show that it's a homemade instrument. But that's where I kind of forget how I always belittle how simple it seems. Right. But it is kind of a complicated process and was very time consuming. It was, you know, a couple hours every day to just get one or two notes done. And but I it was such a joyous process, though, because as soon as you get one more note, that's like another note. I would have four notes and I could play like Mary Had a Little Lamb, and I would get so excited because there was always potential for more and more music as we were building it.
Yeah, that's super cool. And I know some people that are listening right now are probably we've already gone too technical.
Yeah, we're very technical.
And I promise we'll get out of this in a moment, but there's some really interesting things.
Yes.
The first thing that I want to acknowledge is you said your first instrument that you built. How many until you've got to the current?
That's right.
Because people want, and this is what I really want to talk about, and regular listeners of the show will know this, of like more of the process and in-depth rather than the surface level of what we were talking about right before this started, of we all want this finished product.
Yeah, the end goal.
This sweet Instagram pic or whatever, like performing in front of the huge festival crowd.
Absolutely.
And we forget when we see you with your, we were just watching your YouTube channel too, with like millions of views and hundreds of thousands of subscribers. But it started with like making one note.
Yeah.
Cutting a piece of pipe to make one note sound right.
Exactly.
And no one saw that ever. Mm-hmm. And that's like what I want. That's what I want to show people. Like, you have to do that. It's like, so you can't skip that work.
Yeah.
So like where you made the first one and it wasn't right.
Yep.
Because it's never going to be right.
No.
And then so where, how, like, what's that from the first one that you had to reach too far for that one, hit that one note, cause that's how you had to do it, to now where it's kind of right.
That really takes me back. Before I even decided to make a PVC instrument, I remember getting inspired to just even get paper towel rolls and try to make music with that, like cut those to different lengths and try to figure out music from that. And so to see that evolution from literally the like kernel of the idea to make the music out of the pipes to actually having, like you said, like millions of YouTube views. Like, even I'm just like, wow, like just in 10 years time, that's quite, you know, a progress. I mean, that's, yeah, I still think fondly back to, well, I guess to answer your question, I've built technically three separate instruments. I've built my original one, which was kind of three separate sections on its own. It was like a middle section, which we built. And then I realized, oh, I want some more notes. I built a high section. And I was like, oh, I could use some more notes, and then built a low section. And this was all in high school. And then come college, then I was intrigued to build another instrument that I could take down to Los Angeles with me, because I'm from Oregon, and my dad was even encouraging, like, hey, let's, you know, let's leave one set at home and you can have like a kind of a travel set that you could have down at school. You could play it, you know, games and whatnot. So I built that one exclusively for LMU. And then just a few years ago, no one actually really knows about this, I built a miniature version to give away at a summer arts camp that I was working at as like an auction gift. And just as an experiment for myself, it was like, okay, what if we shrink this down to have like a kid size mini pipe kind of version of it? And it sounded great. It turned out well, but it's just a sweet thing too, to go back to Home Depot every iteration and remember, like, it is just that first step of being like, all right, we're here. And I get so excited by the thought of like, starting again and taking that first step.
And what was your original goal in the beginning? Just to make an instrument for fun because you like music, or what was the goal?
After seeing the Blue Man Group show, they've got this part where they play tributes to some of the great rock stars that came before them, including Lady Gaga and Madonna, Ozzy Osbourne. And I just wanted to hear more of those recognizable songs on this really cool sounding instrument. And that was kind of the catalyst of the idea, was to kind of make a smaller 2-octave range of just the piano scale, so I could literally take songs I grew up playing on the piano and put it onto that. And that's where, you know, there's like two sides of this whole story. I feel like there's the actual development from an instrumental engineering side, which I'm not an engineer by any means. I'm very much a performer from like birth. But my dad, who was kind of helping me, was very business minded, came from working as a general manager of Marriott hotels, and had the ability to like use common sense and help, like the fusion of our ideas and minds together really made it possible. But then the other side of this coin too is the music side. And that's where I feel like a lot of people forget, the amount of hours any entertainer needs to put in is, I remember hearing, for like even like a comedy skit, like a 3-minute comedy skit, like every 10 seconds you have to put in like 100 hours or something. Like 1 minute is like 100 hours. And you just think about, like, I think back to like my high school days where when I first built the instrument, I was practicing it like every day, 2 to 3 hours every night. But it wasn't practice. It was fun. Like it was something I was so passionate about that I was able to just kind of jam away, learning new songs, practicing old ones, trying to finesse my talent. But it's a thing where I even, you know, I'm so grateful for my piano background too, because that's thousands of hours of playing piano since I was 5 years old to get to that level. And so to go back to your original question, it was just, I was just intrigued with the idea of covering songs that I heard on the radio that I was like, these are cool. And to have just an instrument that allowed me to play on, you know, the pipes and kind of recreate that Blue Man sound that I love, but taking it that step further to hear the songs I wanted it to play. And it was just it was a fun experiment that's turned into kind of a mini side career for me.
You have this, so you had that experience when you went to see the Blue Man Group, and I just saw you last week performing in Hollywood.
That's right.
At a bar. And it was a really interesting thing of people weren't there to see you at all.
No.
No one there knew you were going to be a performer there. It was a kind of a pop-up performance. And I was in the audience and I saw a unique perspective of this thing of people. There was a really cool thing of people. You would start into a song like you in like, I don't know how long your performance was, 3 minutes or something, 3 or 4 minutes or something. And you played a lot of different songs, like a medley, and there was this really cool like phenomenon that happened as people, you would get into this thing, and when people realized what song you were playing, they were like, yes!
It's the best part.
And they had this like experience of that that's their favorite song, maybe.
Yeah.
Then you created this like emotional, people didn't care who you were, because something was coming through you to connect to them.
Yeah.
So the question attached to that is, when you're doing a performance, what do you want? You left that Blue Man Group with a thing that created something real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just were hitting things.
Mm-hmm.
One level of what that was is they were hitting things.
Yeah.
But that created something that they might not ever know that you did something very similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
You created something that you can hit and mm-hmm. make sounds. But somebody else might have been like, oh, I can create a rocket out of pipes that, you know, something.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's a whole other thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. My God. Yeah.
But the original thing was, what do you want people to leave? I watched people just be so happy that a song that they recognized and that they could sing along to, even though you weren't singing words.
Yeah, yeah.
That they could sing, they could do be the singing parts of that. And they were so happy that that song came out of these things that shouldn't do that by looking at them.
It's magic,
like,
right?
No, like that's not it's, what people.
Yeah, it's that intangible,
like a thing,
like that intangible quality of transcendence in some degrees, where especially with a community of that brief moment, we're present all together. It's like we are creating this moment together.
Yeah.
And I think that's a beautiful thing. And that's what I really strive for with, especially these medleys, when I perform live, is to find a way to make every person in that, the vicinity, like whether they're actually there to be an audience member, if they're bartending or whatever, security guard, like to relate to the music and have this kind of common experience together. That brings every culture together, and that's the beauty of music, I find. But particularly with these medleys, I will strive to have a different song from like all these different eras, genres, so that whether it's somebody from like, I don't know, China listening in, or someone from like a like Los Angeles, you know, very westernized like perspective on music, to find a way to connect and to. Yeah. To enjoy that moment and to find maybe that moment that's like, oh, that is my favorite song. And to kind of surprise them, blow their minds with this musical kind of experience.
Yeah. I don't know if my question was verbalized properly, but you answered it with that. I was kind of going for that.
Yeah.
Like what you want to create for those people. And that's, you answered it without me.
That magical moment. And that's the difficult thing for me as an artist then too, is to find a way to play that kind of commercialized music as well as the stuff I'm really drawn by personally, but wanting to still make sure everyone else can relate as well.
Yeah.
It's a balance.
What's something, a question I like to dig into is, what's something that, like an experience or someone you've met or some event that has happened to you because you decided to do this thing? So if you would have, you could have been, okay, so back up, since you don't have a fast answer to that. You're thinking of something?
I've got one. I think I do. Like, are you saying like one cool experience that's come from this?
So like your life, a different version of your life could have been very different than this because of like some decision that you made a while ago. But you decided to do this thing.
Yeah.
Now you're in this whole world. Like, now I met you because
we
perform at weird Los Angeles like events.
Random chancing. Yeah.
So what's something that like, somebody who didn't decide to do this, or
but it has affected my, like, because I can think of one standalone moment that was just like a really cool experience, like that I have a story for. But are you saying that the question is more of like, what's a moment that really has basically changed my trajectory in life because of this, or
both of those questions could be
valid.
My initial, I'm talking too much, and then
I like it,
and then adding questions onto the question.
I love it.
And then
I love
being
it.
Confusing.
Yeah. We're clarifying.
When I listen back to this, I'm gonna be real angry at myself for talking so much.
I feel like I'm
like
talking
he's
a
trying
lot
to
too.
Answer the question. Why don't you just leave him? The initial question was, and you can answer all of those additional questions that I almost asked. The initial question is, what's something really cool that's happened because you decided to, that one day you decided to make one note.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, I like that also, that idea of like this one little thing brought me to this, like if you're climbing up a tree, you start on the trunk.
Yeah.
And like one little decision can turn into you being way over here instead of way over here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'll tell the fun little easy story of just like a cool moment with the instrument, but then also talk about how like this was a very life-changing decision to build this instrument as well for me. So one of my finest like moments as well was I auditioned for America's Got Talent back in 2010, season 5, I believe. And at this point, you know, people are always encouraging me to go back or re-audition and like see how much further I could get. And I'm like just happy with where I'm at in life, like, and just kind of, you know, moving forward. But on the show at that time, the hosts were Piers Morgan, Howie Mandel, and Sharon Osbourne. And at my first audition in Portland, I played Crazy Train as a part of my medley. And so one of my favorite little stories to bring up is the fact that I got to play Crazy Train by Ozzy Osbourne for his wife, Sharon Osbourne. And it was just such a fun, that like speaking of like connecting to people on a moment, it was just a beautiful moment just between me and her, even that they captured on TV. But it was just right after my performance, the first thing she said was, "Excellent choice of music." And I was like, "Thank you." You know, I just loved to be able to like bond with her in just that brief little moment. And I think that's what really is magical about this instrument, again, for me, is those experiences of kind of playing live for people. But
and I'll jump in on that again. Yeah. Just as my experience of I saw you like only a couple times perform as someone who I didn't know any background of it or anything.
Right, right, right.
But like there's like this surprise element.
Yeah.
Of like, again, because in most people's world, they've never seen anything like this. They kind of have seen Blue Man Group do something like this, but most people haven't seen it live in person. Like, I've never seen Blue Man Group in person, but I know, you know, I get it. But that surprise thing of like, at first, you're like, well, oh, wow, it worked. There's that thing, the three stages of like, what's this?
Yeah.
And then, meh. Oh, there it is. Like when they recognize it, they're like, oh, wow, okay. And then
multiple layers of clicking, yeah. And that's what's cool, too, is like I'll often go street perform in Santa Monica on the promenade out there, and people will either, they'll hear it from far away. Like there's a three stages as this as well. They'll hear it from far away. They're intrigued. They come closer. They see a guy just wailing away. That's intriguing, and they look closer to it, and the instrument's really like beautiful and interesting to themselves, too. It's like kind of like a gut waterfall of like blood. It's just like all, you know, the red pipes. It's very visual. But and then they stick around because then I try to be very entertaining about it too. And so there's multiple layers that I like to make sure I'm covering so that it's you know, well received on multiple layers. But yeah, that's where I think this instrument is also has changed my life too, because the other story I had was it thinking back in high school, I was making YouTube videos. I was doing a lot of like stop motion Lego animations, and I was performing. I grew up dancing, doing music and theater, but I had this perspective going into college. Oh, I should go study film because I'm loving these, you know, videos. I'm loving these animation stuff I'm doing. I figured follow my sister's footsteps of going to this school, Loyola Marymount University down in Los Angeles, but to go into their film program. At that time, I had no idea. Like, I was just, you know, needing to do something, and that sounded cool. And I remember visiting the campus and talking to the animation director, and was like, I like making these like animations with like Legos moving. And he was like, oh, cool. So do you draw? And I'm like, no. And I was like, is there not is there a stop motion program? And he's like, well, you would take the regular courses of drawing and putting, you know, storyboards and animating to that perspective. And I was like, that sounds dumb. No. And I remember distinctly, and this is the memory I have, is in my senior year, I was the assembly videographer, director kind of guy. Like I was making technology director. That was my title. Making videos for the school's assemblies to be kind of entertainment. And I was creating this really cool concept of a video that my assembly directors came up with, was announcing the princess court of our MORP, which is prom backwards, so that's like girls invite the guys. It's kind of a fun thing, but to do it in a Disney themed, like the whole celebration was around Disney, and we would announce the names through these videos of them going to have to go hunt for the envelopes with the names of the princesses in the Disney animated movies. And so my task was to green screen these guys into these very specific scenes of, what was it, Snow White, Little Mermaid, Aladdin, and The Lion King. And I loved the idea. I loved all these things, but they only gave me like 2 days to make this happen. And I was like, oh my God, there's no humanly possible way to do it. And I remember waking up that morning at the assembly and I only had like two of the videos done and I like overslept and I was like, oh God. And I like quickly gathered as much as I could. And I was like, okay, you know, maybe we can make this happen. We can like bring the guys back in. They could wear their costumes. They had these silly costumes. They could bring them back out and like do half of it on video and then half of it like live. And I remember running into the school and the assembly had already started because like everyone had been there early because an extra long assembly for all these extra videos. And none of it worked. The computer wasn't right. The projector didn't work. And I was just like, no, all this like time and effort and work. And the school is just watching me literally run around failing miserably. And like, I was just so traumatically embarrassed. And my assembly directors just weren't willing to like to recreate it live. Like I was just like, can we find a way, like do all these things? And I had the PVC instrument there and I remember having a Disney medley that I did not practice and like had to like go entertain the crowd while like they try to figure out the projector. And like I whipped out like the worst performance of my life. But it was in that day that I like it clicked for me. And this is when I changed my major from film to theater as well, because that's when I realized that at least with theater and live performance, there's an element of the show must go on. There's a way to make it work. Even if everything else fails, like the human spirit can survive to make something happen. And that's what I loved about like the Blue Man Show. And that was, you know, what I was inspired with my instrument as well, that I like completely changed my route in that moment to go from wanting to be behind the scenes exclusively with like film and stuff to really wanting to be more active with my performance. And that was heavily due to like the PVC instrument inspiring me to want to go audition for Blue Man and study more theater and become better at that craft.
Yeah.
That was a long story.
Yeah.
But like a really vital one to my, yeah. my like well, yeah, existence.
There's a lot of more than just like a fun story there. There's like yeah. psychology and stuff happening in your brain that's really interesting, which I was going to jump in and say, I'm like trying to do more film and TV stuff now because I'm like, because there's that, because of the opposite of that. Like mm-hmm. when something goes wrong, you're like, it's okay, we'll try it again.
Yeah.
I've had like enough years of doing live theater where everything is going wrong and you have yeah. to like make up for it. Now I'm like, all right, I want to do something that's not as stressful.
See, that's so wonderful. And that's where it's like, I'm in this weird in-between state myself where I'm like completely shifting gears where I'm slowing down with YouTube and I feel bad about it, but like I feel more... like I've got more exuberance in my life when I'm collaborating with other people and doing something tangibly in front of yeah. me and not just locking myself in a room yeah. trying to be the perfectionist that I know I really am, but like trying to convince myself like it's okay, like I don't have to be like the 100% perfect the way I want it to be. And even that Daft Punk medley we just watched, it's like that one, it's like I consider that to be one of my closest things to a masterpiece of a video. And there's just little things down to like, if you go back, I'm not wearing socks or shoes in that video. And when the video pans back, like you can see that. And it's like, God damn it. Like one little detail, my videographer friends was like, oh, they won't be able to see it. I'm like, you can clearly see I'm not wearing shoes. So it's like, you know, regardless, you can't be perfect. And I'm learning to let go of that. Concept.
We definitely didn't notice.
No one's looking at that except
I know,
you.
Right? I know. Just enough like random people comment on it eventually, but that's where it's so that's
those
where
kids I'm, on YouTube will find anything.
Oh my God, all the kids. But they're I'm so grateful for them too to have that keen eye. I'm just like, oh cool, you're noticing the things that I'm like I particularly notice. But that's where it's fascinating to hear that you're driven by that, because it's the kind of I like the balance of my life too, of having yeah. live performance and like YouTube and all the other things I do. And I do behind the scenes theater work now. Like I stage manage a lot, but it's kind of fulfilling whatever you're feeling in at your point in life too, is yeah. doing all the things.
And this is probably getting a little bit too theatery people-y, but that's okay. I think I was just
we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Kate can jump in and stop us. Yeah,
I think we were just talking
Keep checking on us.
About this same thing of like, I just did a TV commercial where I was juggling on a unicycle and this thing. And I had to go to like an audition for it. And it was kind of like they already knew that I was going to be the thing, but they needed to see that I could do it the first time. Because there's a thing with being on TV and commercials that if you send them a video, you could have maybe
manufactured it a little bit different or something
300 times that day in your living room. And so anyway, I did the thing, like the actual
performance
on
for them.
Camera.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got it. Through the audition, I was on the actual thing. They're filming, and then the producer came up afterwards. He was like, "That was like better than we could have ever imagined this going."
Awesome,
because you just and he mentioned he was like, "You did everything. Like we were telling you things that you didn't know that we were going to tell you to do, and you did them first time every time."
That's awesome.
And I was like, "Well, yeah, like that's what I don't get a second try."
You're right,
and. Going back, again, this is a little bit of a stretch into anything that most people might be listening that will care about, but there's a thing of the other thing of like just being prepared and having this foundation. Like my foundation is in live theater where you get one shot and something's going to happen that's not right. And then you fix it.
Yeah.
And then the audience says, "Wow, that was so cool how you interacted with that person." I'm like, "Yeah, that was a really terrible moment in my brain for a second. And I had to figure it out."
Those are the best moments, though. That's where it's like the live theater is actually really exciting, too.
And you get that.
The mess ups.
So, like, there's whatever people are doing, whether it's live theater or accounting, something's like things pop up that are scary and terrifying. And you're like, "I don't know what to do." And then after it happens, you have one more skill of, "Hey, I know what to do when this happens." Mm-hmm. Like when I'm on the 6-foot unicycle and the person throws the club and it like hits the wheel, I know kind of what to do so I don't fall down into the crowd or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like that's my world.
that's so interesting because it's a lot of, okay, two things about that is like the first half of it is just with the live performance, you experience things that you never could have anticipated. That's where things go wrong in the weirdest way possible. And you're like, "Okay, how do I recover from this?" But I always think about how, and this is just for anyone though, is like you learn more from your failures than your successes. And like just with my story just then of like that like life-changing thing was from a complete utter failure. And that's where I wish more people could embrace failure in their life and just and admit their wrongs, admit their whatever, just to have that vulnerability to one, allow others to enter their lives more, and but also to better themselves and to know that they are human, they are able to grow more. Because, you know, we all go through the stages of being like, "I'm invincible, I'm the best in the world," or whatever. But like, ultimately, you only get to those like better places in your life from experimenting, from rehearsing, from trying and failing so many times. And I just am so grateful every time I get to like mess up now and like find something new to like grow on, because otherwise you aren't learning. You're just plateauing, you're staying stagnant. And it's a constant reminder to have to constantly be pushing yourself, doing one thing every day that scares you, to just like constantly be bettering yourself in whatever way it is.
Yeah. And let's jump back into this idea of, we were talking about it just before we started recording, my thesis, if you will, of life, of jumping in and making things happen with the just go, hashtag just go theme. I'm working on this thing of like, well, we were thinking about it for a little while of like the just go generation.
Yeah.
As that's what we have to be now, because previously people could afford maybe to like think about things and make them perfect and then release them, and that's how the world used to work. But now that's like a really bad idea. A better idea is like just talk about publicly how you're getting to there. So I don't have a specific question about that, but do you have any thoughts in general about this idea of just go, like start doing something before mm-hmm. you know how to. You didn't know how to make all the notes,
mm-hmm.
but you did know how to hit a thing
mm-hmm.
and see what note it, what sound it made, mm-hmm. and say, "Oh, it needs to be shorter, so yeah. let's cut an inch off of it."
Yeah.
So somebody. We were just talking about my book. I didn't know how to write a book, but I knew how to write a blog post.
Right.
So I spent 6 months writing blog posts,
and then
I had a book.
Yeah.
I don't know what. Like I said, I don't have a specific question, but do you have any other besides actually building your thing?
Right.
Going out in front of an audience,
mm-hmm.
the first time you're like, well, I don't know. I think I know how this is going to go, but I don't mm-hmm. know. Or street performing.
Mm-hmm.
You go out in front of a street. You're like, well, I'm not really supposed to. Like, this isn't what a normal thing is. People are going to walk down the street. They're not really expecting to see it. I need to
it stands out. Yeah.
change their day.
Yeah.
So do you have any, the question is, do you have any moments of that where like, it would have been easy to just say, no, I'm not going to do that today.
Right.
I'll wait till I'm better at this.
Yeah.
But then you did it.
Well, oh my God. I relate to that on so many levels. Because just with the instrument itself, it's like, just go. Like, yeah. I just literally went to the store, bought out pipes, and started putting it together. And like, the first iteration of the instrument sounded like shit. I had to go back and fine tune the notes 2 years later and actually correct the pitches because I just tuned it by my ear with a piano. And then I realized, oh, I can get a tuner. I can fine tune it that way. But then I also think about like you saying street performance. It's like, I never, this is where I really admire your motto too, because I never can promise things and try to fulfill them. Like if I say like I'm gonna go make a specific video, I end up never getting around to it because I'm like, I already kind of feel like I fulfilled it by saying that I did it or I will be doing it. Mm-hmm. And especially with Third Street Promenade, going out there to street perform, I have to like decide the day of like I'm gonna go do this, and I don't tell anyone until I'm there. And that's where I feel bad because like some people are like, oh, when can I see it? And I'm like, haha, you never can know. I'm just gonna surprise you. And it's usually just a random weekday during the middle of the afternoon. But like that's when I'm like, I'm feeling this impulse, like just to go do it. That I'm like, I need to go. Like just this past Thursday, I might try to go do it tomorrow. And like that's the only much advance notice I'll ever have for myself. Because otherwise, then once I'm at the promenade too, there's that whole level of starting to play, just doing it. Because it goes from silence to me making music, and there could be people eating, people like on their phones near me, and I'm like, well, I'm going to be disrupting their current state of peace, but I just need to do it. And then, within 3 minutes, an audience will form, and like there's just that magic of creating that experience in that moment. And as soon as I'm done, it's like it's gone, and it's like I just went and did it, but. And then this is my last version of like last layer of this is my current state of life, which is where I like your whole group of just between dreams is like, this is where I'm at a state of my career, really, of being so fanatic about wanting to be a blue man for the past like 10 years of my life, from when I first wanted to build my instrument, really, to the past couple of years, I had been on this trajectory, let's say, of wanting to become a blue man actor full time. Seemed like the dream job, right? Like, you know, full time, like just doing like nighttime performance, like a couple times a week and get to do theater and music and just this really explosive, energetic form of entertainment that is so up my alley. And I don't have to talk because I hate talking. And it's like,
welcome to the podcast.
Definitely had to develop the skills to be able to just even converse on this level. But to be on that path of wanting to be a blue man and then to be rejected from auditions one after one after one. All the way through the end of college when I auditioned for the third time, got to go to New York, do the final callback, painted myself bald and blue in front of the whole team of directors and did a part of the show. And it was like a dream come true, but then it didn't work out. Like, and then, you know, the reasons behind that were multiple, but like mainly I'm just too bright and happy of a person to like have that like very serious kind of neutral blue man character. But it's a thing of I still hold a nugget of that dream of wanting to be a blue man. But these past 2 years since being rejected that time, I've really had to let that go because I'm finding this dream is, you know, me pushing to make this dream happen isn't actually getting me to that point. It was me end goaling to try to get to that final state, but not really, really staying in that level of the process of just developing myself in a career, however I can, in a way that I can actually have some control over what happens. And so even this past summer, I reached out again to the casting team and I was like, hey, I'm interested in auditioning. I just finished a year at Del Arte International Physical Theater School. I feel more prepared to perform. And they're like, Kent, it would be just disingenuous of us to actually let you come audition because we've seen you so many times. It's just not the right fit. And you should at least take another couple of years before you come back again. And it's a thing where I've had to let that go, that now I don't have that same tunnel vision dream of wanting to be a blue man, that I'm in this weird vacant space of what do I do next? Like, I don't actually have like a vision of the next big thing I want to do. It's just me in this kind of state of unknown, taking it literally a day at a time, not knowing if I should go get like a real job. Should I keep going on this fun little thing I do, or, you know, pursue theater exclusively, music exclusively. But what keeps me going is just that idea of just go, just do it. Like, I don't know what the bigger, you know, dream is at this point, but I feel like I don't need that at this moment. It's going to click when it clicks. Meeting you like wasn't a planned thing until like I met you literally like just a couple of weeks ago for the first time. And then now this is happening, and this is a fun experience, the very least, that we're like just talking about life and things. And it's just giving, it adds to our perspectives and adds to where we can head in the future. But I don't know what the next day holds, but at least if I just keep going, I know I'll find whatever that level of bliss is for me.
Yeah. So there's a couple things that within that I think are really interesting and good for people to hear. The first thing being that the uncertainty / doubt / self-doubt, I think, would be the best generic word for it, of that performers generally have, that is what sometimes makes a great performance. In that moment, there's those moments of when you're wheeling your thing out into this place that you're not really, like, it's not like people are coming there to see you. You're gonna create your own theater on the street, and me as a passerby is going to see you in the middle of this thing with a crew around you. You're like jamming, rocking out. You're like, and there's a kid or a guy or a girl or somebody who walks by saying, man, I wish I had the guts to do that. And so many times I feel like I wish they could hear that story of like us right beforehand, really close to not stopping in play, like carrying our stuff out there and be like, nope, not gonna do it. I'm gonna go home. I'll just pack it up. And like that, I don't think most people that see performers think that ever I wish I could be that person. And I've been backstage enough shows seeing people pace back and forth, like reading jokes that are on their hand and like losing their mind, freaking out because they're so nervous. And then I see them on stage like crushing it. I'm like, what? Why was he acting like that? And then you're like, that's how everyone is. Everyone that's up there acting like they're a star is terrified before they do it.
It's a real leap of faith. It's a scary thing for everyone. And that's where I sometimes am. I'm at a point too where I'm just like, I try to either not care or I just like don't think about it. Cause like, if I just get myself out there, I'm like, oh, it's happening now. Yeah. Okay. Let's make it happen. You know,
which
comes with all the rehearsal, like jumps in, trust on that.
Right. But. Yeah. Don't go out and do it.
If it's
you
a new
suck.
Scene, it's like, oh, it's a new skit,
not
new
everyone's
medley.
A good stand up
like,
comic.
Oh, yeah.
So like,
you always assume that at a certain level that doesn't happen. Right. I don't know what level it is, but
I feel like it's,
I think different
levels. Yeah. If you're doing it, like, I mean, yeah, if you're doing something new for the first time, whether it's like you're in medicine, right? Like, are you a doctor? Are you a surgeon? What?
PA.
A PA.
You know what that is?
No, I forget. I don't. I think PA. I think of like personal assistant or program associate or whatever.
master's degree, one level down from a doctor. So oh, similar, damn. Similar job description. But
it's a thing of like, you probably feel very confident with, oh, this is horrible well, example, this... applying a Band-Aid, but like doing like, you know, like neurosurgery or something. That's like a, another level where it's like, once you've done that like 10,000 times though, you're like a master of that. Like it's more comfortable. There's different elements, but I imagine it's like that same level of the thing of, you know, if you're trying something out for the first time too, mm-hmm. it's like, mm-hmm. okay, this is kind of an experiment. Let's see mm-hmm. how this goes. I've done a lot of research. I've done a lot of preparation, mm-hmm. but it ultimately mm-hmm. still is like, it comes down to doing it, like mm-hmm. experiencing it. And that's where you learn.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely. Definitely. I've done some new procedures lately that I've learned, and it's rough in the beginning that you know, so much thinking about it, but you get out and do it and it's not so bad.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to ask, since we have this opportunity of having a guest host mm-hmm. today, how any of that relates, like, do you have a specific of that? Like, so that was a good, I think you just did it very briefly, of like a new thing. And then you're like, oh, I don't know how this is going to go. But then you do it the first time and then it works.
Yeah, I've thought of,
hopefully.
I've thought of many instances hopefully. Of this.
Or not.
Especially of the being backstage kind of thing and getting ready to go out, pacing back and forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
For me, a lot of that, the thing that came to mind was like when I go talk to families, give them bad news, tell them the news, what's the diagnosis, what's going on, you know, what is it that your MRI of your brain showed? Is it a tumor? Is it a stroke? So and then I'm like, sometimes you're, you know, nervous to go out and explain stuff to people. But it definitely with time, it gets easier.
Yeah, more experience. I was literally thinking that the other day. That was part of the fear of going out to the Promenade again. I hadn't been out street performing for 2 months because of the holidays and other gigs and things. But it was that fear of like going back out, not necessarily for the music side of it, because I'm comfortable. Like I've done those songs tens of thousands of times at this point. But like to go talk and like
the reactions.
To communicate, that's something you have your sayings that you can, you know, prep and get more experience with. But every time it's a different reaction, a different way you have to communicate
mm-hmm.
that, like, that's still something that's always a tangible thing you have to do on the fly and
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
constantly learning from. It's like a level of improv too. I always hear like improv classes are good for people, like regardless of their background, just because it gets you more of that kind of interpersonal communication experience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I could see that. Yeah. And even in my job, there's some level of performance, right? I have to, even if I think, ooh, this looks really bad, or, oh, this is not bad, you have to have an even keel.
Seem like you have control, like a sense of what's going to happen, even if you have no freaking clue.
Could be, yes.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, I'm not going to.
Thank you, doctor.
Elaborate on this.
yeah. No,
I trust our doctors more than I trust.
We have our stuff together, but I mean, sometimes you think, man, this is not going to go well, but you don't know, so you don't want to say that. So you have to just be cool.
Yeah, and the second side of that, like that doubt, unknown world that I wanted to touch on of what that last rant that you had was this going back to, you touched on it before, of like this just go theme. And I feel like there's this in every like culture of whether it be like religious books or like yoga meditation or self-help books or whatever level of things, that every single piece of thing, there's one of the fundamental pieces of this is like one step at a time. Like a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. You know, there's things in the Bible about one day at a time. Like you have enough to get through this day. Yeah. Don't worry about tomorrow. And like every culture, religion, spiritual group, everything has some way of saying that. Like you don't need to know how to get down from the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
Like you need to just get out the front door.
Yeah.
And that's what stops people is like, well, I don't know how I'm going to, my thing, and regular listeners of this podcast will know this story. My thing was always like, oh, I want to be a touring performer, but I don't know. Like, how do I get through the airport with my gear?
Mm-hmm.
That like stopped me from doing it for a while. And then I I just booked something that I had to fly to. And then I like had to go to the mall and buy luggage.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And then then I was like, oh, I need to buy a new unicycle that breaks down and fits in this luggage.
Right.
And then like a few $100s later, I was like, oh, cool. I can fly anywhere. And then now I've like flown to Singapore with unicycles. And that was impossible.
Right.
In my brain, because I was so many steps beyond that. And it was in a way like an excuse. Oh, I don't know how to do that. So now I don't need to try mm-hmm. to do that. Mm-hmm. And then what's something great about eliminating those things, you take one step and now you realize, cool. And at a certain point, then you realize like how many excuses you're making for yourself by thinking 5 months out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have very well stopped making that thing because you thought about, oh, I'm going to have the street perform. Mm-hmm. I don't have to do that. We're like, how do I, you know, so many things. And I want to, I'm using words to delay this, of trying to think of more relevant things for people who maybe aren't performers.
But it's like any project you start too, it's like there's creativity that comes with those challenges. And then once you have that, often with like a gig in our cases, or I'm sure like any thing that's proposed to you in a work setting, it's like you see what is necessary to achieve, that you eventually have to take that first step to figure out how. But I can definitely relate with like the projects I work on, whether it's a theater show or a video, you think fondly at the end of like a final product, or like, wow, look at how much we achieved. But then once you have to reset and start again with the next thing, which is just the cycle of the day, even, and waking up, it's like, all right, reset, new day, new beginning. But like you eventually get going, but I always have to like remember, like I kind of forget the joy of each of those steps too. And I think there is that kind of fondness of you're going from like the very beginning to being in the middle of this like messy process, which is such a beautiful exploration, and where you do discover new things, whether it's like finding the luggage to be able to travel, or like finding the crux of what your like my medley will be, or whatever that switch is. But like of taking those steps, because eventually you do reach that summit, but if you just think about only that end goal, it is impossible to achieve. And I think of so many videos, or, oh my God, bigger, like an album, or just even like dreams of like the dream of being a blue man, like just those things that I will only ever dream of unless I take that step forward to like make it tangibly possible. And it's just a matter of foresight and planning, but it's a fun process. That's where I try to find the joy in it constantly too.
Yeah. And there's like this thing of when we first start, we're too stupid to like realize how hard it's going to be. And then,
yeah.
Of like, cause like now, if I had to start now, I'd be like, nah, no. If I like knew what I knew now, but mm-hmm. I was just thinking about this before of like the last week. Well, recently, when people are hearing this, Harrison Greenbaum was at Scott Neary's Booby Trap show performing. And I was talking to somebody because Harrison used to do this show in New York City. I was living in Pennsylvania, and I like would just like reach out to everyone. Like, yo, can I be on your show? I was like not prepared to perform on these level shows.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't know. Why not? I was kind of just assuming that everyone was going to say no.
Right.
And then it was this show he's performing in New York City. It was like in Times Square, like theater in Times Square, like a sweet comedy club or something. And he like called me right back. He's like, hey, man, like, yeah, I saw your website. Yeah, you can come do a show. And I was like,
boom.
Oh, it was easy. Just because I was too like dumb to realize that I probably wasn't qualified to do that show. But then he's like, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And now that's what's happening now with my podcast, the podcast that we're listening to right now. Well, we're making it right now. You guys are listening to it right now.
You're like in episode 50 something now, right?
Yeah, this will be 50, possibly 60-ish something. Wow. And there's something about that of like, that creates, you just start, like at first it was like I just knew enough friends that were performers.
Mm-hmm.
And now you just start doing, now you just like ask people and they're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Yeah. That sounds awesome.
That's that happened with us.
But there's a lot of things in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I had something else to say in there, but I'm gonna listen back to this again and be angry that I missed it. But that's okay. But like with that of like at first when I had like 12 episodes, I'd like reach out to people and wouldn't hear back
because
mm-hmm. they're like, man, it's 12 episodes. It's probably not going to do a thing. But there's something in like, cool, I can plow through this and make a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now that there's 50 or 60 episodes, now the percentage of people that say yes is like skewed up. If 2 out of 10 said yes before, now 2 out of 10 are saying no.
Yeah.
Just because there's that thing of
more so legitimate
this, going back to whoever's listening of doing something like just sticking to something and doing it will convince people that you're good.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't try to be good, try to do it longer.
Mm-hmm.
Try to be bad longer. Like how long, like just don't have any like thought of trying to be good. Just try to get it done.
Yeah.
And then you're going to get really good at it.
That's especially true with our generation too. And I'm very much to blame for this too. Is like that.
Doctors don't listen to that. Don't try to be bad. Like, get pretty good. Get pretty good first.
Yes. No, but it requires that commitment regardless. Like,
it's like for jugglers and stuff.
Yeah. But like, I feel like regardless of what it is, it comes down to that persistence and determination of having that drive, of wanting to achieve something greater. It's not going to come in just the first time you do it. Like, even Edison like failed like 110 times before he found like the light bulb or something. I think
it was 1,000 times.
It might have been 1,000 times. There was something else that was like 110 times. Like, I forget. Mm. I might be thank you, Kate, for helping me with my history.
Wrong.
That's clearly not my expertise. But like that drive of just, you know, committing, and that I think of that just with the technology and social media nowadays, where it's like you can immediately scroll and move forward and move past. It's like if you don't fully commit to like even reading a book, like you won't greater yourself from just surfing the internet all day, just like flip, because you're just constantly going like this. But if you are more specific about one thing that you can follow through on, even if it's, you know, listening to a full album or like reading a book or just going outside for a hike, like you have this experience that you can better from because you are doing one thing fully. And especially with like, you know, your career, it's like to fully dive in, it's a scary thing. But when you do that, that's where you find the magic. That's where things click. That's where you take that risk to finally achieve something that's even bigger and better than you could ever dream of. I never imagined my YouTube channel would have 250,000 subscribers, 40 million total video views, but like it's happening like right now. And it's the thing where it's like, I had no vision of that. Like, I really just wanted to be a blue man, like, and just having fun with my pseudo dream in the process. But it's those other things that you can't even expect. You can't anticipate that will happen that are beautiful and magical and you will cherish because you just committed to it.
Yeah. Jumping in. Just go.
Just go.
Hashtag just go.
I can't tell you guys how guilty I'm feeling right now.
Why?
Of all the times that I've told people that I'm going to do an open mic night, and aww, I've never done it.
Well, now's your chance.
Now I have to.
Go.
I wish we had a guitar right now. You could just play it for us.
Yeah. Sometime soon.
Oh, well, don't air quote that. No.
I think we're going to wrap this up here in a few minutes, but I think that's something that whoever's listening and had that feeling right there,
just go do it. By the end of the month, just go do it.
Like, almost everyone that's listening had that thought for something that they're thinking
definitely
about. whether it be an open mic or something super small of like a girl in math class that you wanted to talk to, of like whatever level it is, however important it feels, like everyone has that. Even like I have that with things. I'm like, oh, I need to do this. Like, why am I not doing this?
I do too. All the things.
I wrote a book so about doing things and I'm not, and I'm not like even being like, what the heck am I
doing? it's a constant struggle every day. Got to remind yourself. So take that risk.
That's the thing. Jumping in, making things happen, and starting maybe before it feels like you're ready. But let's kind of tie it all together here. We're coming up on our hour.
Boom.
And a lot of the stuff is here, and you could chime in with this if you want. Kate, guest host Kate. You could come back every week for the guest host.
Yeah.
Just fly out to LA every week.
Okay, cool. We have budget for that.
We have budget now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, so
can
much
you guys
budget.
Buy some t-shirts? Just go. Comment, Chris Ruggiero, like, sure. Amazon.com. We need a lot of those to sell.
Wrap this all up. And I know we've just kind of done that for the past hour, but wrap it up in a nice package. People who are listening, who just had this thought of, man, I keep telling people I'm going to go do an open mic night, and I haven't done it. Man, I keep saying I'm going to write the first chapter of my book. Man, I keep saying I'm going to make a YouTube channel. Man, whatever. What's your tie-in thing? And I know the answer to this is just go. But in your world, what's your package to hand off to these people who are listening right now?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, that was a question for me? Oh, gosh. Well, it's that thing of like even just talking about this, like whatever achievements we've had, like it means nothing in the present moment. I feel guilty even just right now of like all the little things from, yeah, like whether it's asking that girl out or going to the, you know, make an album or going to try to perform around the world. It's like I feel like there's still so much more that I could just go do. And like, I'm saying this to everyone as much as I'm saying this to myself of like, it is that thing every day you wake up, it's a fresh reset, restart. And it's the little things. It's just the little things of like maybe not, you know, doing the things that will hinder that, like going on Facebook as much as you do, or you know, if you want to like lose that weight, like just go walk. Even like I'll do that for myself. I'm just like I'll go walk as I'm checking my Facebook. Like that's how I'll do it. It's like find a way to multitask in the littlest ways. But whatever you can do, that's a very tangible, easy thing you can do in the daytime that will make that step forward for yourself. Just go do it. And that is so redundant to say, but like, it's a constant battle. Remind yourself in your brain. It takes that extra effort to make it happen.
Yeah, and just to hit that again, it sounds easy.
It's not.
And it's simple, not easy. Is a good thing of that. And I know everyone says like, oh, it's cool. But it goes back to, again, that was good. I'm glad you said that, of this thing. It keeps coming back to the tiniest scale. Mm-hmm. If you can just get right over there today. Mm-hmm. And then worry about the rest tomorrow.
And that's the thing, was like as soon as you start it, like a book report, like as soon as you start it, it gets easier because you're like actually doing it at that point. Yeah. But if you're just waiting and questioning and, you know, self-deprecating, like you won't do it.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Cool. I think that's good. We'll wrap it up there.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks a lot. It's been fun.
This was a lot of fun.
And that's a wrap. Thank you for listening. Thank you for clicking on my face or however you ended up being here listening to this show. I know there's unlimited amount of things you can click on the internet. You could click on me or you could click on a guy playing music by hitting paddles onto pipes cut in a certain way. Speaking of which, if you would like to find out more about Snubby J, check out his stuff. Awesome performances, awesome videos. Go on YouTube, type Snubby J in. I'm sure you've seen the videos being shared around Facebook. They're everywhere. I just looked and a handful of my friends shared that video and they don't even know that I did this podcast or anything. So they were just
People seeing something awesome and sharing it. So check that out. It's really cool. It's unique. It's different. And that's what it's all about. Getting out there doing stuff. And you guys should now get out there and do something of your own. And I hope you are inspired and motivated and pumped up to get out there and do that. My voice is shot, so I'm going to go. Thank you. I will talk to you guys next week. Send me a message. Keep listening. Keep downloading. Again, send it to a friend. Let them know they can listen on Google Play Music, Stitcher, podcast app, iTunes, chrisrugiro.com/podcast, blah, blah, blah. You know. Okay. Thank you and goodbye.